Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Why are you here? We're talking to Carolyn Mace about Sacred Contracts, one of her many best-selling books. Welcome to the show, Greg Braden.
Well, good evening, Nicole. It's certainly a pleasure to hear your voice and a pleasure to be here tonight.
Welcome to the show, Stuart Wild.
Thank you very much.
John Kehoe, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, how are you?
Next up, Dr. David Morehouse.
I'm so glad that you called me because you are doing such an important task, important work, because you are spreading a very positive message.
I was really moved by last week's show because we made a commitment to a worldwide event to try to change consciousness.
I'm feeling enormous energy around this show, just enormous. I really have to hand it to you, Nicole. You've created sort of a niche of amazing connections. It's just like the angels and the devatas that are like attracted to News for the Soul is amazing.
Hello, everybody. This is Damian Brinkley. Welcome to the hearts and minds of Enfoldment. This is News for the Soul.
Hello, this is Satyan Raja, and you're listening to News for the Soul. Be open in your mind, your body, your being. Allow yourself to drench in this awesome information to evolve you to your next place.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul.
Next on the News for the Soul Radio Network, it's the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, nutrition, natural medicine, advanced Ayurvedics, and more. Dr. Holly is a scientist, the author of 17 books, and a professional international speaker. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here now to help you achieve complete optimal health. Welcome, Dr. Holly, to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. How you doing today? We have just a minute.
Breathe.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. This is Daniel.
Next on the News for the Soul Radio Network, it's the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, nutrition, natural medicine, advanced Ayurvedics, and more. Dr. Holly is a scientist, the author of 17 books, and a professional international speaker. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here now to help you achieve complete optimal health. Welcome, Dr. Holly, to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. How are you doing today? Sorry we're starting late. Nicole had all kinds of technical difficulties stemming right from New York. But as usual, she's on top of everything. We're just a little late. 12:30. Okay, so we got an awful lot to achieve in half an hour. Let's start out with our garden. As you know, we've been doing the first segment on gardening, the second segment on medical questions, and the third segment on answering your questions. So, what I thought we could do for the garden component today is if you're into getting into your gardens, if you've already started this year because of the COVID journey, like many people have, that is awesome. If you're thinking about it, that's awesome too. But what you want to be doing when you're setting out for your garden, whether planning for this year or next year, is figure out where your light is coming from, your sunlight is coming from. So whether you're looking in the garden, on your deck, in your windowsills, we can plant something everywhere. We've got things for you no matter what space you have to grow your own fruits and vegetables. Again, we've been pushing this for 5 years. But a lot of people have been asking questions, well, how do I get started? Well, I don't know what to do, what to plant, where, what have you. So it was the end of August, we started doing a segment on gardening as well. So what you want to do right now is figure out where you have your sunlight. Now, some things grow better in the shade, some things grow better in the sunlight. But you want to look, for instance, if you're looking at your garden, blocking the sunlight. Do you get sunlight better in the springtime versus in the fall? You want to have a good idea of where the sunlight focuses. You also want to know what time of the day. For instance, tomatoes love the early morning sun. Corn, although you don't plant corn until the soils are very, very warm, like the middle of June, end of June, middle of July, they want the sun all day long. On the other hand, you have a number of things that prefer, a number of foods that prefer the shade. So what we have is a list here. I think Nicole has posted it, Garden for September 29th. Chart your sunlight. The greens that you want that love the shade are also really good for early spring and for your fall and winter vegetables as well. So if we're looking at salad greens, things like arugula, collards, kale, don't forget kale is a perennial, not an annual. Your lettuces, mustard greens, spinach, and Swiss chard all love cooler weather. They prefer the shade to the hot sunlight, although they can grow in the sunlight. But you'll get more production out of them if they're in a more shaded area, protecting them. Root vegetables like beets, carrots, potatoes, radishes, rutabaga, and turnips all prefer areas that only get some sunlight. They don't need the full sunlight. Again, they grow well in the fall. Legumes, your peas and your beans. Again, beans are actually okay in a full sun as well as in the shade. Your peas will last longer if they're in more shaded areas. I planted my sweet peas in the direct sunlight, getting most of the sunlight just to see what would happen this year. And as much as we did get a couple of good crops, we didn't get near as much as if you plant them where they only get a few hours of sunlight and not that real hot afternoon sunlight. The beans, on the other hand, my pole beans, my goodness, I only planted two plants this year for pole beans, but I have so many bags of beans in the freezer, it's unbelievable, and they're still producing, and I still have a big bowl of them in my fridge. Every 2-3 days, I get a big harvest that will, I mean, there's only two of us, but that harvest every 2 or 3 days will last for 3 or 4 meals, so I'm constantly bagging them and putting them in the freezer. Herbs that can grow in the sunlight as well as in the shade include chives, cilantro, mint, oregano, and parsley. Now, out of those, mint grows like a friggin' weed. All the different types of mint, you can have it in the shade, you can have them in apartment blocks, you can have them in the windowsills. They really don't care what they have, they can grow anywhere. They are like a weed. Cilantro is much more particular. It does like some sunlight. It prefers cooler areas as opposed to the hot. Whereas things like chives, oregano, and parsley, they can grow virtually anywhere. I have, 5 different types of oregano and 4 different types of parsley. Only one type of chives. Chives, again, are perennials. They just keep coming back year after year after year. So what you want to do is you want to make a diagram of your yard. And it doesn't have to be fancy or anything. Just take a pencil and paper and go to it. You want to use, if you're in a yard, of course, your front yard, your backyard, are you facing north, south, east, west? If your windowsills, what direction are they facing? Determine what's getting the morning versus the afternoon sun, the hot sun in the middle of the day or all day sun or virtually no sun. Then you can start figuring out where plants are going to grow the best. Now, like I've mentioned with quite a few of these, some of them will tolerate different areas, different amounts of sunlight and what have you, whereas others are really, really particular. So, again, I'm in BC, Vancouver, which is as much as people think we have rain here all the time. We do live in a rainforest. It's beautifully green all the time. And we don't get the really cold winters or the really hot summers that you get on the East Coast. So we're in more of a milder area, and I'm just giving you some basics. you'd be much better off if you go, you know, take whatever basics and work with them, but go and look it up on your internet. What works really well in your area for growing? Remember, our soils are all different. Our atmosphere is different. And so our sunlight is different. You get sunlight in Vancouver versus sunlight in Mexico versus sunlight in Costa Rica. They're very, very different types of sunlight. So just with our bodies, it's always different. Experiment. Play with the experimentation. Work with it. Okay, so for instance, even in my garden, I have reorganized my a couple of my mobile, if you want, raised gardens that are on legs. I'm moving them into different places to get more shaded area for the plants that love the shade. So on my patio underneath the deck is getting a lot more shade, as well as behind one of my guest house. There's more shade there. So I am going to increase my productivity and rearrange my garden a little bit this year because I want a whole bunch more plants that I wasn't planting before, a number of other ones. So if you grew gardens this year, as many did with the COVID journey, make sure that when you're preparing for next year, you're not planting the same thing in the same place. For instance, you never plant cabbage in the same place twice in a row, whereas other you can. Some people say you all should plant potatoes in the same. Well, that depends on whether or not if you've got, say, a fungus or some bacteria that got into the potatoes, then you don't want to. If you had a healthy potato crop, then go ahead and do so. Now, in terms of what you plant after what, I made a short list there. You can plant beans and then onions in the same area. You can plant legumes and then cabbage. You can plant lettuce and then legumes, beet then legumes, grains then tomatoes then legumes, squash then legumes and carrots. These are just some real basic ones that you'll find are anywhere. But if you take advantage of that little bit of information, it can help you to really make a lot more productivity if you want in your garden. So let's just leave that gardening now for September 29th. We'll take that one out. And now we want to look. See, we started late. Okay. The article for today, depression, is it psychological or is it physical? Now, number one, on my website, choicesunlimited.ca, I have a number of videos. You can go to my YouTube channel. There's a number of videos there on depression. You can go to drhollybooks.com, download a book that I have, Depression, The Real Cause May Be in Your Body. All of those are options. Here we've just gone through a very short summary, okay? My first book, Depression, The Real Cause May Be in Your Body. I don't remember how many pages long that was, but certainly not just one short 10-minute session. But let's go over some basic things. Now, as a psychologist, because I was a psychologist for 20 years, and I fought it the whole way. They didn't like me, especially when I wrote the book. And they didn't like the fact that actually they wanted to charge me with fraud because I was told by lawyers to put all my real medicine, physical medicine degrees and designations under my maiden name and leave psychology under my married name. And so the college wanted to actually charge me with fraud. Lawyers just couldn't believe that they were that ignorant that they would do something like that. But anyways, I love psychology. I love how we think and organize, how we perceive, interpret the world, and respond to that interpretation. That's all really empowering when you understand that. But psychology is incredibly limited. In fact, when I was in India doing my internships for Ayurvedic medicine, I got the opportunity. I was both in Bangalore and in Cochin for that. And they just laughed at Western medicine and how we were just in kindergarten. So we had some really phenomenal discussions. Yes, I agree. All right, so let's go through this. With psychology, they'll often look at your childhood to learn, to see how you learn to interpret the world. And, of course, your underlying life themes, your filtering mechanisms. If you have beliefs that you're not good enough or I'm not lovable or I do everything wrong or I will never succeed at anything or What, you know, there's 1,001 different underlying themes that people can live their lives through. And that can definitely have a huge impact on how you perceive, interpret, organize, and respond to the world. But really healthy mechanisms and still go into depression, because it's not about how you learn to interpret the world, but rather it could be a reaction. For instance, if you've just lost somebody and you're going through a grieving, well, reactionary depression is normal. We move through it and move on. But there's also physiological conditions that can cause depression. Now, one of the ones that psychology is willing to look at and Western science is willing to look at is hypothyroid. The challenge with hypothyroid is, even as the WHO said, 80% of people on Synthroid, the primary prescription drug that they give for hypothyroid, they shouldn't be on it because it's not the thyroid. The problem is either the adrenals and or the liver. Why? Because the two main hormones that the thyroid produces, T4 and T3, produce a lot more T4, but T3 is a lot more powerful. You do the conversion from T4 to T3 as the body requires it, and 80% of that conversion is done in your liver. So if you don't have a healthy liver, and with, I think, 35% of the people by the time that they are 30, vegans, vegetarians, and other diets as well, all-inclusive, have what's called non-alcoholic fatty liver disorder. If you have low levels of glutathione, if you have infections, inflammation, all kinds of other things in the liver is not going to do that conversion. In addition, if you have either hyper or hypothyroid, the cortisol production from the adrenals interfere with the deiodinases, which are the enzymes, conversion. So as much as people are put on Synthroid and then end up on Synthroid for the rest of their life, we look at, is it actually the adrenals or the liver that's causing the issue? Whatever is the, now it could be that you don't have enough iodine for the thyroid, and of course we can get that through diet and supplement. But whatever the issue is, that can cause depression. Okay? Now, another big area that in the last 10 years, the amount of information that has come out about the gut and the microbiota is huge. When I was a naturopathic college back in, 2003 or 4 or something, we identified just over 500 different bacteria in the gut and what they did and what have you. And there wasn't a whole lot they did, but they did do some stuff. Well, now, 15 years later, there's over 35,000 different bacteria that have been identified. A lot of them do the similar things or same things, what have you. But they do a huge amount. They produce all kinds of compounds that we require, pre-enzymes as well as enzymes, neurotransmitters like GABA, and that's my issue with my genetic issue. One of the things I don't produce is GABA, and I have to depend on the microbiota in my gut to do that for me. But they do just a ton of stuff. We've recognized for ages now that the microbiota in your gut can have an impact on your emotions, your thoughts, and your behaviors. And yes, they can have a huge impact on depression and anxiety. So recognize that. I actually need to know, if we're looking at the gut, about 80% of the population who have or are diagnosed with depression also have constipation. Does that not tell you there might be a link? Holy cow. Yes, it does. Other issues that can cause problems that end up in depression. One of them is nutrient deficiency. Now, again, this is, I actually offered to the college, you know, I can come in and provide a course free of charge to help you understand what nutrients that the brain requires. They didn't want that. I couldn't believe it. It's like, really? Come on, guys, wake up. But anyways, magnesium. We know that magnesium is used for over 300 different functions, even in a basic cell, just to make one compound of fuel, ATP, adenyl triphosphate. You need magnesium 180 times, and yet commercially our soils are depleted in magnesium. We know that, when they do random laboratory studies, blood's coming in for whatever reason in the laboratories and they get tested for magnesium, you see between 92 and 100% are deficient in magnesium. There's 13 different types of magnesium. Only 3 are bioavailable, and of those are used for different things. But ultimately, we are magnesium deficient. So if you have over several million neurons in the brain, and you have 10 times more glial cells, so these are a variety of different types of glial cells. They provide transportation, they provide nutrient, they regulate your neurotransmitters. They do all kinds of things in the brain. And you have 10 times more of those cells than you actually have of your neurons, and they all require magnesium. So imagine if you're magnesium deficient, that can have an impact on the brain, and that can cause depression. I've solved depression so many times just by giving magnesium. It's unbelievable. It's like for crying out loud, and they're giving them all these drugs, and all it was magnesium. Holy cow. All right. Now, but we talked a bit about the mitochondria and that you need 100 magnesium 180 times to produce one compound of ATP, but that's not all you need. You need B1, 2, and 3. About 70% of the times that you need magnesium, you also need vitamins B1, 2, and 3. You also need CoQ10. You also need iron. You need a variety of things to make this ATP. So if your mitochondria are not functioning, because they're not getting their nutrient, they can't produce the fuel. The cells now can't do their job. So, yes, you can go into depression. In addition to the B1, 2, and 3, other B vitamins are B5, 6, 9, and 12 are all involved in neural functioning. So you want to take a really good, healthy B vitamin complex. Now, the problem with the B vitamin complex is that you often find as many of the components are synthetic. You don't want synthetic. More and more research has come out of the last 10 years. Synthetic minerals, vitamins, omegas, polyphenols, whatever. Synthetics just don't work. The body recognizes they're synthetics and they don't like them. So get some really good B complex out there. Now, when we're talking about vitamins, we often talk about vitamin D3, which really isn't a vitamin, it's a hormone, but it's been labeled and recognized as that for ages. And we know D3 is hugely important to your immune system, to all kinds of different functioning in the body, but it's also important to neural functioning. So you want to make sure you're getting out there even this time of the year. Get out there, get sunlight. Don't put on the sunscreen. Get some really good sunlight. 15, 20 minutes, you absorb about 5,000 units of vitamin D. Get out there. Get that sunlight. You need it. Okay, so what else? Well, the mitochondria, like I already said, needs other components, one of them being iron. So we need iron from two different ways. Number one, we know iron is really important to those red blood cells. And when they're important to the red blood cells to bring us oxygen and to take away the carbon dioxide. But the brain uses about 20% of the body's oxygen. So if you have anemia, whether it's vitamin B12 or iron, those are the two most common types of anemia, then either way, that can affect the brain and depression. Obviously, if you're depleted in iron, you're also going to be depleted in the oxygen component to the brain. So that can cause depression as well. But that's not all. What else can cause depression? Well, your neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine, etc., they require amino acids. One of the best amino acids is sources for amino acids is your hemp oil. Your hemp oil has all your amino acids. If you want, I'm going to have to just go on hold just for one second. I apologize. All right, I'm back. Sorry about that. The amino acids, both your essential and non-essential, are in your hemp oil. Fantastic source of amino acids for things like serotonin, dopamine, SAM, S-A-M. They all require your amino acids, which are great for your hemp oil. Then the next thing that comes really important for your brain is your fatty acids. Your brain is about 70% fatty acids. They are really, really important. Your EPAs, your DHAs, your ALAs, they're all important. They can be converted in different ways at different times. Make sure you're getting some really good healthy fats in your body. Now, one of the ones that I always support, and I didn't even finish the sentence there, sorry about that, people, is your avocados. Your avocados have the similar balance of omega-3s to 6s to 9s. That's your anti-inflammatories, your pro-inflammatories, your regulators that our bodies have. So if you can include avocados, whether it's in your smoothies or in your salads or in your Mexican foods, which are great for avocados, that is fantastic. Now, another one that can cause depression, that's been linked with depression, is zinc. Insufficient zinc and insufficient levels of selenium. So make sure you're getting your minerals as well. Now, one source of minerals that's really good across the board is your Himalayan salt. Himalayan salt has both your regular minerals as well as all your trace minerals. Actually, I've seen it knocked because, well, some of those minerals are just trace minerals. Well, they're supposed to be trace minerals. Don't worry about it. Now, even carbs can be important to the brain. Why? Because with the excess of carbs or with a component of carbs in your diet, you're going to increase the secretion of insulin. That helps to trigger the entry of tryptophan into the brain, an amino acid that is required for a number of different neurotransmitters. That's really cool. However, in addition to being deficiency, we can also have an excess. So if we have a surplus of various compounds, that can cause some major issues. I'm looking at the time, 12:53. I don't know if we're going over. Nicole could send me a text to see if we have any extra time here today, being we started so late, but let's keep going. We have problems like excess sugar. How many times have we talked about the excess sugar? When we have an excess, we create what's called AGEs, advanced glycation end products. They're horrifically horrible on the body. They attach to cells. They cause cells to go into dysfunction, even into cancer, and to die. They can do all kinds of problems, cause all kinds of problems with the cells. So that occurs when sugar gets into the brain as well. Okay, your different types of sugars. Now, in addition to that, the AGEs can provoke the creation of amyloids. The one that's most researched is the beta amyloids, and they can block blood flow to the brain, so the brain's not getting the nutrients, the oxygen, as well as all the other nutrients, and it can't take away the waste and the toxins. Another one, actually, I don't think I put in here, is melatonin. Melatonin you should be creating all day long. It gets stored in the pineal gland and gets released when you're going from stage 3 into stage 4 sleep. And melatonin is great for all kinds of healing in the body while you're sleeping. But in particular here, what it does is it cleans the brain, which is fantastic. So if your cortisol levels are too high, you're not going to be producing enough melatonin. So you're not going, even if you go to sleep, you're not going to get that really deep healing sleep. So that can end up causing a variety of depressive-like symptoms as well. Heavy metal toxicities as well, whether it's mercury or lead or cadmium, they not only are known for causing various psychiatric disorders, but depression as well. Aluminum is another one that's associated with depression. So again, you might have nutrient deficiencies, but you also might have heavy metal toxicities. Now, there's all kinds of other issues that can cause depression, like pain and heart issues, a variety of issues that limit our ability to function in society. That can cause depression. Numerous pharmaceutical drugs can cause depression. The really big one here that just always throws me is depression can cause, the antidepressants can cause depression, and not only depression, but suicidal thinking. Like, excuse me, guys, these are supposed to be antidepressants. Well, if you look at the real research behind the research behind the research, you find that antidepressants work for about 18% of the people that take them. In fact, that applies to almost all drugs. You have to take into consideration the placebo effect, which runs anywhere between 32 and 38%, which could cover that entire 18%. So when you're looking at pharmaceuticals, be very, very careful. Know what you're taking. Know what the problems with the drugs are, what kind of nutrients they deplete, what kind of things they interact with, what, you know, in your food and what have you. You need to take responsibility for what you are doing. Okay, so what kind of pharmaceuticals are well known to react to, or to cause, not react to, but rather cause depression? Well, antibiotics. How often do we prescribe antibiotics? Why? Well, they're killing the good bacteria and the bad bacteria in your gut, and we know that the gut and the microbiota in the gut are hugely related to depression. What about anticonvulsants? Now, these are used for seizures, for bipolars, and for neuropathic pain, but they can also cause depression. Benzodiazepines, oh my goodness, at one time in the 80s and the 90s, they were considered the worst group of drugs that had ever been created and typically are prescribed for anxiety and insomnia but can cause huge depressive issues. Beta blockers used for high blood pressure can cause depression. Birth control pills, now one of the things I would say for birth controls is it's probably most linked to the fact that birth control pills can deplete things like CoQ10, which again affects your mitochondria, which is producing the fuel. So if the brain doesn't have the fuel to function, golly gee whiz, it goes into depression. Corticosteroids for inflammatory conditions, hormone regulators for menopause, Parkinsonian drugs that affect your dopamine channels, protein pump inhibitors, which are typically used for GERD but can be used for other things, your statin drugs. We all know that cholesterol is a myth, but statin drugs are huge for depleting, preventing the body from making CoQ10. Stimulants like Ritalin and for ADHD, all of these kinds of drugs can actually create depression. So if you are in a depressive state, figure out, is it just simply psychological, how you've been taught to interpret and respond to the world? Is it a reactionary depression that you'll move through? Is it due to nutrient deficiency? Is it due to heavy metal toxicity? Is it due to other physical conditions? Is it due to pharmaceutical drugs? And it could be due to a number of compounding things that are interacting together. Those are all huge. Okay? It is 12:59, so I'm assuming we are coming to the end of the session. We won't be answering any questions, that being the case today. Dr. Holly with Choices Unlimited for Health and Wellness. You can go to choicesunlimited.ca for any contact information and a ton of other information that's free and available for you. I will be gone for the month of October, but Nicole and I are doing all the pre-programming for those 4 weeks. Oh, we've already done one. We're doing another one this afternoon and two more on Friday. So we will be with you in spirit. However, it may not be up to date. You know, if things come up, we may not be addressing them simply because the program.